From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 88 with guest Michael Nystrom, recorded Friday, November 7th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody. Richard, pretty good week at TechEd, huh?
Yeah, we're at the final throws. Community area's been shut down. The DJs are going nuts, so I don't know if the music's actually going to come through in the recording, but that's okay. It's good stuff. I'm tired. It's been a long week.
Yeah, it has been. It's been a good one, though. Got to see and visit with a lot of good people, see some really cool new stuff, and I think it was really worthwhile.
I totally agree. I'm looking forward to next year in Berlin. I think it'll be really a lot of fun. Speaker Isle was off the hook this year again, and Rhonda Layfield, of course, congratulations to her. We've got a guest, Michael Nystrom.
Yes.
Michael, nice to meet you.
Same. Thank you for being here. It's very fun to be here.
Where are you from?
I'm from Sweden and work as an IT pro, consultant, trainer. I'm in the an MVP and setup and deployment, actually, but I do most stuff on the mid-size and companies, I would say.
So you get around?
Yeah, much.
So what did you like at TechEd? What were you looking at?
I was looking for EBS stuff that I'm working with and Hyper-V virtualization.
That's, I do like Hyper-V. We've had a couple of shows on Hyper-V already, and it's been really cool stuff. The Essential Business Server, I think you were referring to with the EBS, if I get the acronym correct.
Yep.
Now, that's the big brother of SBS?
That's the trick. Many people think it's a brother or a sibling or something that is related to. And yeah, part of it is and some part is not. For instance, is it a big one? Is it a big SBS server? No, it's not. But it has some similarities.
Well, I mean, small business server, and correct me if I'm wrong here, 75 seats limit. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the cap on it. And it's Exchange, SQL Server, obviously Active Directory, and some kind of front end. I think it's Forefront is in it as well.
In SBS, you have Forefront for Exchange.
Right.
You have OneCare for servers and stuff like that.
And a license for SQL Server, too.
Yeah, in the premium version, you have that for SBS.
Oh, okay. It's only the premium edition of it. And that's supposed to all run on one box.
Yes.
Which is scary to me as a guy who's, you know, I just feel like Exchange doesn't work and play well with others, but that's just me.
Yeah. So in EBS, they've done it differently. And I would say the main difference is that in SBS box, that is designed to work in an environment where you have no IT personnel whatsoever.
Right.
So it just works. It stands there. It's doing its job. It's kind of boring, but it's working. The EBS is more focusing on helping the existing administrator to be a more manageable platform, because you need to manage that. You run it on three or four different servers. So it's a totally other ball game. One difference is that if you do an SBS installation, it will create the Active Directory for your group policies and stuff like that. I mean, you don't need to really know everything. If you do EBS, it's a combination of helping you to do the correct installation, but it's still Active Directory and you still need to do standard stuff like creating organizational units and stuff like that. So it's not that kind of locked down. It's more flexible.
Interesting. And it also seems to imply, and I think this is what you were saying, that people would be buying EBS that already have Windows Server, already have a running Active Directory domain.
Yeah, and that's why they don't create anything. I mean, EBS goes up to 300 seats,
okay,
devices or users, designed for 250, but works with 300. And in most scenarios, we have been talking with the team, they say, like, no one is going to do a fresh installation or a greenfield installation if you have 300 users. I mean, they don't suddenly find out that, we maybe should have a computer or something.
Even if they have 100 users, I bet they probably have a domain already.
Yeah, they have something. So they have focused on doing migrations.
Brings up a question in my mind. What if I'm a small business running small business server, SBS, mm-hmm, and I grow? Is there Is there a story for me in terms of moving to EBS or?
Yeah, there is a strange document that everybody should know about called Solutions Pathways. Solution Pathways. That is the description of if I have an SBS 2003, how do I do then to get it to up to EBS? If I, for instance, and there's another issue in the Solution Pathways. Let's say that you have a customer running SBS. He can upgrade, migrate, no problem. But maybe some of these customers actually got an Exchange 2007 server. And they go like, oh, you know, damn, the EBS, it's too late. I should have known that long time ago. So you can take your investments that you already have and cash them in for an EBS upgrade.
Oh,
so
I see.
If you have Windows Server 2008 or Exchange 2007, you can use these client access license and server license to get a promotional, some kind of cost for EBS solution.
But does that really make sense? If I already have a running server with Active Directory, I've already got Exchange up and running. I mean, what am I missing from the EBS suite that would make sense to go back to EBS? Why not just add the other missing component directly?
Okay, so the big difference is that, say that you have SBS. The SBS box is really simple to manage, right? Mm-hmm. Then you have the other Exchange server at the side. Is that installed by best practices or is it installed by you, maybe?
Yeah, it's almost certainly installed by me.
Yeah, so is that best practices?
Yeah, I don't know.
No, that's the thing. EBS does the best breed, best practices installation by default. So it's going to set up Active Directory. It's going to set up Exchange, configure everything in the way it should be done to work. So it creates the fundamental IT infrastructure platform for you. Everything is correctly installed and correctly configured.
Right.
So that's one benefit. The other benefit is that, let's say that you have the SBS and you have the Exchange server at the side. The only server that is really simple to manage is the SBS server. The other server is managed in an enterprise way, right? In EBS, you manage all the servers from one server. They have actually created an admin console to make it easy to manage all the three servers or additional servers from one management server. So it's a more of a changing to proactive to simple management. So even if you have the same components, it will still be easier in the long run to manage an EBS environment instead of managing all the server individually.
Okay, so I mean that makes sense to me. What makes the management so easy?
First of all, they included something called System Center Essentials.
Okay.
With Ski, I can see hardware, software, deployment, all errors that surface on every workstation, every server in the environment. I also have simple access to, deploy patches. It's like a simple click, and you get all the patches. It's like approve. We have all these applications running for monitoring, but they filter out that in the admin console. So even if I don't know Ski, I will be able to use that from within the admin console.
So it sounds like, you know, where SBS is sort of geared toward a company that doesn't even have an IT department, probably, or may or may not have an IT person. That EBS is sort of a step up from that. Maybe we have a very small, limited number of person or people that can deal with the IT management of the infrastructure now that we're starting to build one.
Yeah, and I would say that the thing is that, let's say that you have an IT department with one or two, they are going to spend a lot of time to help users and to spend time to make application works. Are they really skilled in core infrastructure, DNS, DHCP? Maybe, maybe not. In most cases, they know what it is, and they may or may not set it up correctly. So they will get this basic working, and they can spend time on being proactive in a way of do we have enough storage? Do we have enough performance? Should I do something next week or next month? We need to try out some new applications. Maybe we should test a new office and see how we should deploy that. Since we have Ski, we can deploy applications. So there's another ball game. It's more of EBS is more of helping the IT personnel to do their job. And today, I don't think they have really time for that. So yes, putting out fires.
Well, and like you said, it is system center essentials. There is a full system center as well, the big one. But now as an enterprise class thing, that's an expensive product, actually.
Yeah, system center essentials goes up for 500 users and 31 servers. But when we run it on EBS, it's limited to 250 workstations. And with different licensing, it's about up to 15 servers. Then you need to add more licenses.
Right.
But you can do that. So it's basically pre-configured in the correct way to work from out of the box.
At that scale, just that few hundred scale.
Yeah.
Well, that certainly, saves a lot of effort. What's the typical deployment strategy look like for EBS? Is it something you use three servers for? Or is it what about virtualization in this situation?
Yeah, virtualization works perfectly. Only thing you should keep in mind is that since this is a consolidated platform from the beginning,
right,
I think the density is about 40 to 60%. Virtualization doesn't always apply in the same way. We have put down like 6 to 9 servers into three, so it's basically condensed from the beginning. But you can virtualize, absolutely. It's no problem doing that. The typical implementation, that will be like go to the customer site, run the planning and preparation tool, about 4 weeks before you try to do the installation. The tool will discover basically every error you have that prevents an installation. So you can't do an installation until you have fixed everything in the existing environment.
That's cool, because my first thought here is I have a running Active Directory, I have a running Exchange server, and you want me to do what?
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty terrifying, actually. Yeah. So what sense do I have that this migration is safe?
And that's the planning and preparation tool. That's they start calling it, I think, the story goes like this. I've been a TAP customer and a partner doing the really early deployment of this. And I think that every TAP customer blow up the first installation.
Yeah.
Based on errors. There's a guy on PSS called Mark Stansfield. And he was, working and helping out, and he found an application internally in Microsoft that does that enormous investigation of an existing environment. So they took the application, changed it, rebranded it, and put all the skills that Mark has for doing that. So that's called Mark Stansfield in the Box. And that is the preparation and planning tool. And that it doesn't fix every problem, but it does. It doesn't allow you to do the installation.
The main thing is, don't do the installation. It won't let you do the installation.
No, exactly.
Right.
When you go to the install and you try to install the first server, it will get to the point to say, hey, load the planning data. I don't have a planning data. Then you don't have an install button either.
Yeah, sorry.
It's very simple. So you need to run those tools.
What are some of the common things that are surfaced by these tools when it comes to doing these
90%, installation? 90% at least is DNS and Active Directory errors, orphan domain controllers, DNS records pointing to domain controller that doesn't exist. And since we are setting up two new domain controllers,
right,
we need replication to work during the installation time frame. So that is what they are checking for, basically.
Yeah, it's amazing how many Active Directory infrastructures have problems these days.
Yeah.
I think it's most of them.
Yeah, I think I saw a top 10 list from Susan Bradley. She found that on TechNet article or something like that. 8 out of 10 problems, top 10 problems, is Active Directory, DNS, and replication.
Wow. This is the thing you want to check. It's also something that doesn't normally jump out at you either.
Yeah.
So just having something go through and inventory all your ADs and figure out what they're up to and whether they're behaving or not, that's a huge thing to do.
Yeah, I would say that one of the problems is that Microsoft makes Windows very very good. So even if we are losing 2 or 3 or 4 domain controllers, it still works.
Yes.
That's the issue. So you never really see the problems until you do replications and put up new domain controllers and stuff like that.
Yeah, resiliency in one department is not necessarily helpful in the other.
Exactly. Right.
So these tools that I use to do the discovery, run them for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or a month, I don't But I can use those anytime I want. I don't have to just use them because I'm going to EBS or setting that type of thing up.
You can use them anytime you want, but the data that it's collected, it's going to be put in something called a planning guide, a planning wizard. So you first run the preparation. That discovers everything. And until you have fixed all the problems you have, you can't continue.
Right.
When you do continue, you can do the planning tool. The planning tool data cannot be older than 2 weeks.
Okay. Well, how long does it take to do the initial preparation to actually get all that figured out in the first place?
The first check will take about 5 to 10 minutes to do. If the environment is good enough to be able to run the tool, since we are going to have environments where the tool actually can't be run because
right.
it discovers problem that is so severe that you have to fix them before that.
Yeah.
That's
and
why
that seems to be likely that you're going to run into issues. I mean, generally we're talking about a small operation here, probably just put the thing together themselves and there's errors.
Yeah. So that's why you should have this long time frame before. I think on TechNet it says like 8 weeks before.
Right.
And that's just because you do it 8 weeks before, you find that you have 4 domain controllers that are missing and you need to put a service pack and you need to do reboot. If the customer has like 200 users, you can't do reboot that time. You need to schedule a maintenance windows to do that.
Right.
So it's just to have the time to be able to fix all the problems.
Sure.
That's why you need a couple of weeks before.
Yeah, that alone. And then after you've got that initial, so you got your fix, you've gotten now to the planning phase. How long does that piece take?
The planning phase, I would say that takes a half an hour maybe. It's a discussion. Should we replace the firewall? Should we have a back-to-back firewall configuration? There's a couple of questions that I want to ask you about how do you want to have the configuration.
Right.
When that is done, you go for installation. And the install takes about 1 day. You do all the 3 servers in one row.
Are we writing over existing servers or are we bringing in new servers?
New servers. We don't touch anything in the existing environment. So we put up 3 new servers. And the only impact that has on user that day is that if we do the replacement of the firewall, at some point in time, we pull the plug and put in the new plug. So
right.
it will be a disconnected internet connectivity for 5 minutes.
Some length of time.
Yeah. And that's the only impact we have. Many people think that, you know, the installation, that will be the scary thing.
Sure.
It is scary for the administrator. You need to really have the 3 servers to be installed.
So we're talking about maybe possibly replacing or reconfiguring firewalls. What kind of services are we talking about that are requiring us to consider doing that?
When you do the replacement of the firewall, if the customer has a single subnet, single firewall, they don't have any branch offices or VPN stuff, you're going to replace the existing firewall with a threat management gateway mid-size edition firewall server. That's the ISA on steroids. And an edge server that is in the security service. So it's just a simple replacement. The only thing you need to do before you do that is to export all the rules. And I know people have been asking me, oh, can you, you know, export the rules and just import them? And I would say no, since the firewall will create many rules from the beginning, you only need to add the rules that are different from what the threat management gateway will do.
Right.
So it will put up, you know, publication of remote web workplace, the terminal server gateway will be there, incoming, outgoing traffic, Outlook web access, Outlook anywhere, everything like that is taken care of. So it's like, okay, I have a whatever application and that needs to be published. So you normally add like 1 or 2 rules for incoming traffic and maybe 1 or 2 rules for outgoing traffic.
Sure. And it's just literally the machine that your internet connection is plugged into.
Yeah.
Does it have support for multiple internet connections? Or?
Yes. No, it's a threat management gateway. It's an ISA server. So you can, whatever that can do, this can do too. So
right.
you can have multiple subnets, multiple network adapters. You can do basically do whatever you like.
All of that is doable.
Yeah. So if you look at SPS, there's many restrictions.
Yes.
You can't do that and you can't do this and so on. And the old premium version of SPS, you had the ISA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, only two network adapters is supported. We don't have that issue in EBS. I mean, add as many network adapters as you want. So
right.
If you want to do I want to have the service in one subnet and clients on another one. Do that.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the edge server adds acts as the router for that.
The edge server is the ISA server, so,
right.
The threat management gateway service. It does take care of both the email, the Exchange Edge feature,
sure.
and the firewall server. So you, in most scenarios where it's possible, I would say you replace the firewall straight up
with this.
Yes.
So that's one of the three servers. What are the other two?
The management server and the messaging server. Messaging server is running Forefront for Exchange. It's running Exchange 2007.
Right.
It's running Remote Web Workplace. And that's about what it's running. Then we have the management server, which is running Windows Server, Active Directory, File Print Services, and it runs System Center Essentials. So it's one machine for managing, and it's one for messaging, and it's one for security.
Ah, very good.
Very simple.
And where does SQL Server fit in this equation?
SQL Server doesn't fit in these three servers. It's a premium version, and with the premium version, you have the fourth server. So that's running aside.
Okay. And that's just like SBS, the premium edition of SBS,
yes.
for SQL Server.
And you have the option to install 32 or 64-bit.
Sure.
SQL Server 2008 is included, but your downgradable rights to SQL Server 2005 for a limited time if you want to do that.
Okay.
But there's a but. You can use the fourth server for anything, actually. You don't need to install SQL Server.
Oh, okay. So it could just be a fourth server for whatever
you
want.
And you have the 1+1, so you can install the fourth server as a Hyper-V host.
Right.
And on top of that, install the same operating system again. So you can use that fourth server as your Hyper-V machine and add other operating system, and maybe you do P2V for old servers into that. So
sure.
you when you're done, you have four servers, and that's what you have.
So speaking of Hyper-V, what's a typical mix look like for a Hyper-V solution using EBS?
Oh, there's some money, but you can do like this. I want to run the management server on physical, and I run the other twos on Hyper-V.
Right.
That's fine, or you can run everything on Hyper-V. Only problem we have then is that the Hyper-V host machine cannot, of course, be joined into the same domain.
Yeah, you need to have a domain server sitting on the host machine somewhere.
Yeah, or it's in a workgroup edition that can
right.
be done too. Or you have only the management server and the messaging server is running because for security reasons, you think that a security server should be running on a physical hardware.
Yeah.
So there's a combination of you can combine all different flavors. The only thing is, like, is virtualization really going to be a good thing?
That's the question I'm sort of hitting against. Is virtualization necessary in a scenario this small?
No, I would say that if you have, like, 10 users or maybe 20 users, that could be a really great idea.
Mm-hmm.
That customer should be targeted as an SPS customer. But, hey, let's say they have an IT person out of working,
right.
They want to be more secure, they want to be able to manage. Instead of extending an SPS, get an EBS and run it on one physical box.
Sure.
So there's all kinds of different things to think of. One thing that I noticed is that when people ask me about virtualization, they go like, oh, you know, with virtualization I can do disaster recovery. And that's true. I mean, virtualization and disaster recovery is really great.
Right.
But in EBS, there is a feature called server replacement. And with server replacement, what they do is that they store the configuration for each of the servers in Active Directory. And that means that if you blow one server up, I actually put up the DVD, put it in the machine, and do an installation of the same server again. And it will say, hey, I do exist. In the case of I'm existing and I'm running the setup, I'm probably broken.
Right.
Do you want me to go into replacement mode? So it will reinstall itself with the same information that you have last time, and it will be default installed. So if you're installing the messaging server, it will be installed in the same way with the Exchange in recovery mode. So even if you lose that server, you didn't have a backup, you're up and running within 2 hours. If you did have backup, put the database back on the same place and fire it up, and it's done.
So, yeah, if I don't have a backup, I've got my mail server back. All my Active Directory stuff's backed up because it was on the other server anyway. Yes. I've just lost the mailboxes.
Yes, but everything's working.
And everything's just working. Yeah.
And the same with the security server. So say that you blow the security server, and it's like, oh, my goodness. Let's just install a new security server.
Yeah.
So replacement mode can also be made for switching if you want to change hardware.
Right, yeah, that's what I was thinking. I need more horsepower in my exchange server. Yeah,
so just do a reinstallation. Do a backup of the databases and nothing else than that. Install the server, restore the databases, and you're up and running. Or you want to switch from virtualization to hardware or vice versa, you can use the replacement.
Same trick.
Yeah, so the same rules that apply for virtualization back in the old days doesn't necessarily apply for virtualization on EBS.
So what happens when I hit more than 300 users? How do I migrate out of EBS? Do I need to? Is there an expansion pack or something?
Yeah, what you do is that you don't hire the number 301.
Because, keep that guy out.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be expensive. There is a pathway to do that. There's nothing called a transition pack yet.
Right.
Maybe there will be, maybe there will not be, but there's going to be a technical way and there's going to be some licensing way to get out of EBS. There's no white paper written for it yet.
Yet.
Since the product will be launched next week, nobody really thinks that someone's going to blow the 300 limit.
Yeah.
Next week.
If you're already at 300, you shouldn't start with EBS.
Correct.
Yeah. So we still have some time as far as that's concerned.
But there's going to be a way.
So we've sort of touched on disaster recovery elements in there, but is there a normal set of backup mechanisms? Is there anything special going on there?
Yeah, there is a special version of the backup. The backup solution that is included in product, that is Windows Backup with a twist because it handles Exchange correctly. So we can use that. I would say no.
Okay.
Since that backup is a block device backup, we need either USB disks hanging off like a Christmas tree on some Blade server.
Not pretty.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that way. So I would say either the customer has a backup application that works today, use that. Or if they don't have that, I would go for DPM for two reasons. It's easy enough to work with, and the DPM team has a plugin for EBS.
DPM?
Data Protection Manager.
Okay.
So if you install Data Protection Manager on maybe on the fourth server or another server, you install the management tool on the EBS, and in the admin console on EBS, you will have all the simple tools to view the backup, see that it works, and stuff like that.
And there's nothing stopping us from just buying other Windows servers and adding them to the EBS mix, is
no,
there?
No, there's no restrictions whatsoever.
Okay.
The only restriction, I would say there's one restriction, that's SCI. If you want to monitor more than 15 servers about that, it's different. Different rules applies to standard and premium virtualization. Right. So it's between 12, 14, or 15 servers. But above that, you need to buy, they call it SAMLs, Server Managed Access License, yada, yada, something.
But 15 servers is a lot, too.
It is. Yeah. It is, absolutely.
These days, anyway.
Yeah. You can add more servers. And SCI handles up to 31, so you're going to, in total, be able to have 30 servers. And if you have a 250-user environment and 30 servers, you're a big company.
Yeah, you're doing something odd. Dude, that's a lot of servers for that.
Something wrong.
Yeah, we're talking about a server for every 10 users. Yeah. That's kind of nutty.
Mm. Or very cool.
Yeah.
It depends on
who you
are.
You're doing something wicked cool, and it's so cool, you really should have a full version of everything.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you can extend that. Another thing that people ask about is domains. Can you have multiple domains?
Yeah.
You can't have forest trusts. You can't have a forest trust. It has to be the root forest domain.
Right.
The FISMA role has to stay on the management and messaging servers.
Mm-hmm.
If you move them, you're out of license compliance, and it will start shutting off and trying to steal over the roles and stuff like that.
Yelling at you.
So it's going to fix it for you. But you can have, while you do the installation, let's say that you go to a company that is a NT4 upgraded, Windows 2000 upgraded, Windows 2003.
Yeah.
They have something called a child domain somewhere. For some reason, they don't really need that, but they have it today. So can we upgrade that? Yes, we can do a migration into EBS. They still have a child domain, and we can keep it as a child domain. Mm-hmm. We can't install and create any new child domains, but we can keep them.
So you're supporting backwards, but not actually allowing that sort of thing to go ahead anyway.
And if you have Forest Trust, they will be either removed or you remove them.
Right.
So,
but that's good. You're going to catch that with the planning tool.
Yes.
It's going to say, it's going to be angry. This is an issue.
Yeah, it's going to tell you.
At least you don't get surprised by it. It doesn't break anything.
But so you can have the child domains just for backwards compatibility.
Cool.
Fix that. I would say that if you do have that, consider to not have that. Place a read-only domain controller on that location instead in the same domain and do a migration.
Yeah, that's a better way to go.
Yeah.
Michael, running out of time. Any final words? Where do we get EBS?
You get EBS from the 12th of November. You can order them then. It's a launch day next week, right?
Okay.
And easiest way to find it is on Microsoft.com/WEBS, I think, webs.
Sure, if you search on Essential Business Server, you're going to find it.
Many information about that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mike, thanks so much for coming on the show.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, bye.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.